Campfire stories, scary ones, strange ones, and unexplained, with Jim Harold in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, you might remember that we feature twice a month podcasters who are doing great little radio jobs on their podcasting. Jim Harold, one of those, he was on with me some time ago, host of the Paranormal Podcast, lifelong interest in the paranormal, and that's what he decided to do. And he does his thing, and as a matter of fact, you have what, a ghost detector? What do you do with that, Jim?
No, I say in my bio that I believe in all of this, but I won't necessarily buy a 1999 ghost detector off of TV. But I do believe, George. So good to be with you again.
You too, my friend. What's new with you?
Well, we just keep doing the shows and the books, and it keeps growing slowly but surely, so all is well. And people keep calling with all of these spooky stories, which is really the best part.
And so you keep writing.
I do my best.
By the way, what is a true ghost story adult coloring book, if I can ask? Temperate, by the way.
I should mention the podcast is Jim Harold's Campfire, where people call in and share their stories. So what we do with the books is, in general, is we pick the best stories and put them in these books. And I know there's this big craze for adult coloring books these days, and people love them. They find them very therapeutic.
What is an adult coloring book?
It's basically a really detailed coloring book, and it's a big craze, and millions of people are doing it. In fact, I think last year, adult coloring books, believe it or not, were the biggest selling books in the publishing industry. So I thought, why not do a campfire book based on some of those stories, and thus far, people seem to love it.
Interesting. That is strange, isn't it? It's weird.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's not my thing. I am not an artist, but what I did is I worked with an artist by the name of Len Peralta, who is tremendously talented, and said, these are the stories I'd like to do, here are my concepts, and he just ran with it and did a great job, and it was great to work with him on that, and he did a fantastic job.
I hope when you were on, as we featured your Campfire podcast, that you got some people to listen in.
Oh, absolutely. Whether it's the podcast or the books or our virtual Campfire Facebook group, which is almost at 10,000. I have a feeling we're going to break it during this show.
Good for you.
It's just great. I mean, Coast to Coast is the Big Mac Daddy, as they say.
Well, it's the ship that wants to get everybody to wherever they're going, and that is what we've decided to do, Jim, and it's working for everybody.
Yeah, and it's a real honor. I always, you know, when I talk to the folks and get to come on, it's really an honor, and always great to connect with you as well.
We don't look at people as competitors. We look at them as partners.
I agree.
Like yourself and everybody else that's out there.
Yep, that's the way to be, the big tent philosophy, I call it.
Yep, absolutely. Let's talk about what got you interested in all of this.
Well, I mean, I'm in my 40s, and, you know, the thing that got me interested in all of this to begin with is way back in the 70s when I was a little kid, and there was a show, many of your listeners, I bet, remember it, In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Love that show.
And every week I would watch that show, and I went to school for broadcasting and ended up working behind the scenes and the advertising piece and so forth, and was kind of frustrated that I hadn't followed what you did and gone on air, because that was my original plan, like so many people. And in 2005 I said, well, I'll just do this for fun, and lo and behold, it's turned into my full-time job, my career. And it's a very neat thing. But when I decided to podcast, I didn't want to just podcast for the sake of playing radio. I wanted to do it to explore a topic that I loved. And if I go in a bookstore or a library or anywhere, the first section I'd go to is right to the paranormal section. There were never enough books. Things used to be a lot different. And I said, I'm going to do a podcast about the paranormal. Started the Paranormal Podcast in 05, Campfire in 09, and it just keeps growing.
And I love it. I mean, I love the variety. You know, it's important. We're in an era now on this planet where you've got to diversify. And, you know, you've got to handle some of the topics that we've handled, just like I did with Robert Young Pelton for the last 2 hours. Where maybe years ago you might say, I'm not going to do this. But really, since 9/11, radio programs and television shows have changed dramatically. If they are going to be successful in terms of reaching its audience with the kind of information you need, but you can't pound away at it every day. I can't do what I did with Robert Young Pelton every night.
No.
Because people would say, oh, my God, where's my other stuff? Yet, at the same time, we can't do paranormal just every night anymore. Those days are gone.
Yeah, I think, you know, I also have some other podcasts, my Plus podcast. I do a show on classic TV. So I like to keep it fresh and variety for myself.
Yeah.
And the audience as well. So we try to do a lot of different things. I mean, these books and Campfire are mainly geared towards ghost stories. But even within that, I say the Campfire isn't just about ghost stories. As we'll see tonight, there are many other kind of strange head scratchers that I can't explain.
So let's talk about what is going on the other side. What do you think it is?
Oh, boy. Well, if I knew the answer to that. But the thing is that I believe there's something going on. I think that I do believe in an afterlife. I'm one of the people who kind of has mixed feelings about the idea of reincarnation, but there are really some compelling thoughts out there and compelling arguments. But I will say this, and I was just mentioning this on a program I was on the other day, and they were talking to me about this. I think that the truth is far more complex than we realize. I mean, we see as science is progressing, there's so many things that we had wrong. Not to say that science is bad. Science is fantastic. But, you know, science didn't know about DNA in 1900, and now we do. Thank goodness, and there's so much we can do with that. So there's so much we don't know about the other side, and I think that we're kind of, what is it, Plato's allegory of the cave, we're just kind of looking at the shadows in the wall and kind of guessing. I don't know that anyone really knows that. I mean, there's matters of faith, and certainly that's great that people have faith. I don't know what it is, but I think there's definitely something. I'm certainly not one of those people who think that, you know, we get our 3 score and 10 and then that's it. I think that we do survive and we are conscious, and I think we can communicate back in the other direction.
Did you ever have doubts about what it was?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think anybody has doubts. I mean, you think, you know, you're having a bad day and you think about something, or maybe you think about a loved one who has passed, and then you think, well, you know, they're just gone and I'm never going to communicate with them. I'm never going to see them. So I think anybody has doubts on these subjects at time. Even I find myself sometimes, you know, doing these shows and steeped in it more than most people, certainly not you, but most people. And this is like my job. This is my life. And even I sometimes find it, you know, hard not to be skeptical. But then somebody comes across with a great story that really is inexplicable, other than there's really something going on. So I keep the faith most of the time, but like everybody else, you have your moments of doubt.
Being skeptical is healthy as long as you're open to the possibilities, mm-hmm. once you get the data and the evidence that these things could be happening.
Yeah, there's an author out there, Scotty Roberts. I think he's been on your program, and he says there are skeptics with a big S and skeptics with a little S. And the skeptics with the big S are the James Randi or the Michael Shermer I've spoken with before and is a nice guy, but he's that skeptic with a big S who is just shut off to everything.
You can't, just can't convince them that
exactly.
of this is right.
Then you have the skeptics with the little S, and I think those people, you know, maybe one story you might be skeptical about, for example, I tend to be a little skeptical about Bigfoot or maybe a UFO video because it's so easy to fake these days. But in general, I do believe in these stories that people come across with. I think you could kind of tell when somebody's snowing you and after you do this for a while. And I believe that the people who call into my shows, for the most part, really believe what they're telling me, that it is something very strange to happen to them and perhaps paranormal, and they're very sincere.
Strange things are happening, and I think eyewitness testimony is pretty good evidence, even though we don't have a lot of physical evidence.
Right.
Eyewitness testimony, you know, they all can't be wrong. They all can't
That's
be
right.
lying. They all can't be seeing things.
That's exactly right. And I mean, you know, and I know that you, on a grand scale, you experience this. You have calls from doctors and lawyers and police officers and military officers and people who, you know, society relies on to be credible citizens. And you get these reports from all walks of life. And I don't think that they're all lying, and I don't think that they're crazy. And I think one thing that why your show and Coast to Coast has been so successful for so many years, and on a small scale, my shows, is people feel that they can say these things and not be ridiculed. Because I think that it's a very sad state that if somebody comes out and say, oh, I saw a ghost or I saw a UFO, that they're laughed at in the mainstream media. I hope that's changing. But I think that's why these types of programs strike such a chord.
Well, I think so, too. Let's get into some of these stories here, some of these campfire stories. So if you're at home, just kind of dim the lights a little bit. If you're driving, try not to look in your rearview mirror because you may see a few eyes looking back at you. And here we go. What do we have, Jim? The lady that comes at night, the lamp lady.
Oh, the lamp lady comes at night. Yes, this is a spooky one. This is Amy from Montana called in and told us about this. And she called in when she was in her 30s, but she told us about this story when she was 14 years old. She had been with her aunt in visiting, and her aunt had a lamp that she had found and asked her niece if she wanted, asked Amy if she wanted. And Amy was really drawn to it. It wasn't a traditional lamp, but it was a ceramic figure of a woman standing, a standing Spanish flamenco dancer, her hand in an upward position with a tambourine in it. And she had a very full skirt that was swirling as though she were dancing. And there were all these little lights in the skirt. You would plug it in and it would light up. She said it was very unique. So she took it home. She put it in her room. And then it was no more than a week and strange things started to happen. She lived out in the country, and her mom would wake them up very early because they had to catch a school bus. And this particular morning, it was very dark. She was in her bed. Amy was in her bed, and she heard this shuffle of her mom's slippers. At least she thought they were her mom's slippers. She looked up, and then all of a sudden, she saw in her doorway the woman from the lamp standing right there. She said she was in the same position as on the lamp. She said she couldn't discern her clothing because it was dark, but it was the same position of the hand, everything. A chill went up Amy's spine. It had tried to trick her into thinking that it was her mother, because that's the way that her mom sounded as she shuffled through the hallway. She said it was solid. You could see right through it. But that wasn't in it. That wasn't it, George. It kept happening. It went on for several weeks, every night. And Amy said she had a four-poster bed, and each and every night, this figure would come to her bed, and it would get closer to her, and closer, and closer. And towards the end, it put both of its hands on each of the bottom posts of her bed and was leaning over it. Amy said it kind of freaked her out to even talk about it on the campfire show. And for the longest time, she didn't. So anyway, she told her parents that that lamp scared her, so they got rid of it. At least they thought she did. They did. A little while went on, nothing happened. She even moved her bed because she didn't want to look at the doorway anymore. And then a few weeks later, guess who is back? The lamp lady. She couldn't figure it out because the lamp was gone. Then one day she was playing outside with her sister, and in the snow she found the lamp. They had just thrown it outside. And she told her parents again, and they finally got rid of it for good. All of this ceased. But Amy truly believes this was evil, and she did a little bit of homework and found out that this lamp was a ceramic piece, and it was actually made by a woman in prison who had gotten in a lot of trouble legally for abusing children. So she wonders if this lamp was imbued with some kind of evil spirit that terrified her. Amy says she knows evil exists. She didn't have a strong opinion on it until that time, but now it has been made real to her. She said the lamp lady had her mesmerized. Maybe that's why it took so long for her to tell anyone, because during the day it was almost like it didn't happen, but at night it certainly did. And that's the story of the lamp lady who came at night.
What is it about nighttime that is fun, romantic, and also scary?
Well, I think that it kind of goes back to us primally. If you think about it, the dark is when you were most vulnerable to attacks from animals or predators or those kind of things. And I think somehow psychologically we associate it. And I think some of it is just our thoughts. I think that these things can happen in the daytime too, that maybe we're in more of a mental state to be receptive to it. But it is true. I mean, I know under certain circumstances, I'm afraid of the dark still, and
do you? I still don't like to let my arm overlap the bed by the floor. You know, I just don't like that feeling.
Think something's going to grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had that, but certainly the dark, certain conditions, I'm fine. Other times, I'm like, no, I want a light on right away. Or the other weird thing, wanting to turn on a radio or television to have sound. You're no more, there's not somebody there with you, but I find that I want to do that too and have some kind of sound going all the time. Very strange.
If you would see a closet door open at night, do you have to close it?
I prefer to have it closed because I think there's some thinking, and I think I've heard you talk about this before. Is there an idea that there's a portal through that somehow to a closet? Yes, yes. Yeah, I don't necessarily like closet doors open at night. That's a good point.
The giant eagle story, what's that?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I've had about three stories over the years like this. This happened in the early 90s to Jim from New York, and he was visiting New Mexico. And anyway, he was driving from Denver to New Mexico. He says it's an amazing drive. He had never been to that part of the country before. The skies, as you know, out in that area are huge. And anyway, at one point, he said past Colorado Springs, he could see 30 miles in front of him and 30 miles behind. So anyway, he came to the sign that said, "Welcome to New Mexico." He came down around the bend, and he could see a huge vista of northern New Mexico. But then what he saw in the sky amazed him. The first thought came into his mind was, I wonder how they did that. It was a cloud formation, but it wasn't just, oh, that cloud looks like an eagle. Literally, in the sky, what he saw was a giant 10-mile-wide eagle made of clouds. And it's not like like an ink blot. You can't imagine. It was very detailed. He said it was though somebody sculpted an eagle out of clouds. He says, I can tell you it was miles wide, and again, I can't emphasize this enough. Jim said he kept looking at it, and he kept saying to himself, how did they do that? And he said, he started to laugh. In fact, it was so strange. He said it was felt so impossible, but yet he saw it. Now, he said, now this was in the early 90s, so he didn't have a cell phone camera because nobody had a cell phone camera. And he said he would have taken a million pictures of it because it was actually there for 15 or 20 minutes before it dissipated.
Maybe a Thunderbird.
Well, I don't know. You know, I've had separate stories about this kind of thing, seeing something very detailed in the clouds, I think three separate times. Once was somebody claimed that they saw a castle in the clouds, extremely detailed, where you could see the bricks. In fact, that one's in the coloring book that we talked about earlier. And then also someone, ironically of Native American descent, said they saw what they call an eagle dancer in the sky in the same part of the country, I think, that Jim had his experience in the American Southwest. And I always wonder about military experimentation, and are they trying to beam figures into the sky? I know there's been some experimentation done on that, so I wonder if that's maybe part of what these people are seeing. But three separate instances I've had people call in, and I'm sure you've heard of similar things. I think it's kind of fascinating.
In a moment, we will come back with Jim Harold and talk about Ouija boards, doppelgangers, and more on Coast to Coast AM, our campfire night with Jim Harold on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Jim Harold's campfire stories and his name of his books, True Ghost Stories. Also, the first one was just simply called Jim Harold's Campfire, right?
Yeah, when we first started out, and then I think people didn't really know what that meant. So we wanted to get across the idea these are true, a lot of true ghost stories, and also there are a lot of true supernatural stories in there too, or just some of my favorites, the head scratchers. Like, I don't know what that was, but it really was strange.
Okay, so I have warned people to stay away from the Ouija board. And some take heed to that, some people don't, Jim. You have a story, a very terrifying Ouija board story.
Well, the Ouija board story that kind of freaks me out the most, and there are quite a few, but one of them is a gentleman we had on the show who said that he had a spiritual teacher. He was a teenager, and there was a woman who was teaching him all of these spiritual things. This was Gabriel from Texas. And he said that actually he had gone over to her house, and she wanted to show him something. So they had a big room there with a fireplace, and she had a Ouija board, like you would buy in a store, laid out flat on the table. And then, and this is what the caller said, so I'm taking him at his word, the Ouija board literally started to inchworm across the room by itself, inanimately. I mean, this inanimate object just kind of going across the room. And then she showed him a planchette, the little piece that goes around on the board.
Everybody puts their fingers on.
Yeah, and she put that in black silk. And then what she did was she told him to take the board and throw it into the fire. And the board would not burn. And then she took the planchette out of the black silk and then threw it into the fire. And once it started to burn, the board started to burn as well. And this was all to say that the power, in her view, is in the planchette and not in the board. And he had an analogy that I guess she shared with him that I thought was very interesting. Was the analogy is that using a Ouija board, in her view, is like spiritually going into the worst part of town at about this time of the morning here on the East Coast, around 3:30 in the morning, with your best clothes and best jewelry, and then hoping you don't get mugged. And the thing is I know there are many people out there who love the Ouija and say it's just a tool, but the way I kind of look at it is this. A chainsaw is a tool, right? And with a master craftsman, they can create ice sculptures and do all these amazing things with chainsaws. Now, if you put a chainsaw in my hand, more likely than not, I'm going to cut my arm off.
Oh, God. Let's hope not, Jimmy. Jeez.
So I kind of look at the Ouija board like a spiritual chainsaw. If you have a highly qualified person, maybe there's something to it. Maybe that's okay. But if you don't know what you're doing, I think it could be very dangerous.
Doppelganger. Tell me your definition of a doppelganger.
A double. When a double of you is seen and possibly interacted with. And we've had, this kind of shocked me about the show. I had no idea that we would have as many doppelganger stories as we had. One story
The doppelganger, I always heard it was the opposite of who you were.
Yes,
so if
you're a
nice guy, the doppelganger wouldn't be, and vice versa.
Yeah, we have one story with a young lady that was in the last book, Campfire 5. She lived in a trailer with her mom, and her mom was home, and her mom was waiting for her. And to her surprise, she stormed out of her room and started cursing at her mother and saying, "You're the worst mom ever, and I hate you, and I can't stand you, and I wish you never lived," and all this stuff. And she storms back down the hall and slams the door. Now, this totally surprised the mom because they had a great relationship. Her daughter was exemplary. There was no kind of gap between them whatsoever. They got along great, great relationship. So the second this girl walks into her room and slams the door, simultaneously she walks into the front door. The mom looks out, and the school bus that dropped her off was right there. And it turned out that the mom was kind of angry, and she said, "What happened?" She said, "I didn't do that. I didn't say those things." And I guess they moved out of that trailer real quickly. They thought something was going on. Another one, and the one I listed for tonight, was Doppelganger Delivery, where a young girl's at school, I think a high school girl, and this is in the 90s before cell phones were super prevalent, and the office assistant walks in with three Oxford shirts that had been laundered for her. And she said, I didn't have any laundry to be delivered here. I don't know what this is all about. So she talks to her mom, and her mom says, no, I don't know anything about it. Then she talks to her dad, and her dad says, you called me specifically asking for this. And she said, no, I didn't. Mm. And he said, yes, you did. It was your voice. And it was his business line that hardly anyone would have the number except for her. You know, people very close and business people. And there was no upside to a prank. So a doppelganger had called in laundry. So it is weird. And it even gets into things like the Mandela effect, parallel universes. I mean, is it evil? Is that one possibility? Is another possibility that we're jumping tracks on the multiverse and kind of seeing shadows of that other alternative reality? I really don't know. And that gets back to my point earlier that this is all much stranger than we understand. At least I believe that.
Well, I've always believed that the doppelgangers are coming from other dimensions, other probably multiverses, and they just cross over, and there they are.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that, like, see, I think I'm a pretty nice guy, but somewhere out there, there's the evil Jim Harold.
And let's hope we never run into him. That's right.
That's right.
I wonder what he'd be like on this program.
I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't invite him, though. He'd be on a bad behavior.
That's right. We wouldn't know until we got him on, and then we're stuck with him.
That's true. That's exactly right. Yeah. No, I often wonder that. And, you know, they say for every person there's an opposite. And I've had people tell me that they've seen people who look just like me. They almost walked up to me and tapped me on the shoulder. So maybe he's around there somewhere. But again, I don't want to run into him.
How about the Phantom Passenger?
Yeah, this is a weird one. This is a weird one. This is David from Alabama. And this one happened to him several years ago, and they went to see a comedian at a local comedy club where he was going. And his wife was going to stay home that night, so he had an extra ticket. So he decided to go pick up a couple of his friends and go. So anyway, he pulls up to the driveway. He gets out. He knocks on the door. And the husband's looking out of one window from the house, and the wife, his friend, is looking out the other, and they both come, and they both ask him simultaneously, are you going to invite the people in your car inside or just make them sit out there? And he said, there's no one sitting out there. Huh. And he said, oh, yes, there are. The husband said, there's a woman sitting in the passenger seat of your car. She's got blonde hair, and she's wearing a white blouse.
Just sitting there.
And the wife says, that's right. And there's a tall man sitting in the back seat wearing a blue polo shirt and navy pants. So this guy was carrying around these spirits and didn't even realize it. And the man and wife, the husband and wife, are saying, yes, there are people in your car. So they all ran outside, and of course they didn't see anything at all. Now, our caller said that he had seen strange things pretty much his whole life since he was about 6. But he says the weirdest part of this story, the reason he likes to share it, is because he didn't see anything this time. Two different people from two different locations of the house saw exactly the same thing, and he saw nothing at all. He says he has an idea who it may have been. It was a young woman whom sounds like he may have had a relationship, and a man may have been one of his great uncles, just by the descriptions they gave. And he said one day he was driving home with his daughter, and his daughter sees those kind of things as well. And as he turned into his driveway, lightning struck near their home, everything illuminated, and he saw a man in a blue shirt, his uncle. But he didn't say anything, and then he asked his daughter, did you see anything? He said, oh, you mean the man in the blue shirt. So David from Alabama, you know, has some kind of phantom passengers with him. And I think that's really freaky to think. It's almost like out of a movie that we may be walking around and driving around every day. They might be guardian angels. They might be spirits of loved ones we knew and who have passed. But there may be some in the room with me right now. And I don't know it. It is amazing to think that could be going on.
And in so many of these cases, Jim, so many of these different stories, you know, that people have witnessed or heard from other people, they're very, very strange, aren't they?
They're strange. And again, David, for example, calling me and telling me about this, what does he have to gain? He has nothing to gain. And one of the things that I notice about the shows is when I tell people what I do now, I've gotten over that part of what's a podcast. Pretty much everybody knows it's basically an online radio show you can listen to anytime. But they kind of look at me funny because I focus on the paranormal. And a lot of times they'll say this, George, they'll say, well, I don't really believe in that stuff, but there was this one time. And then they proceed to tell me their story. So not only are they strange, they're universal. I bet you, even people who don't believe, like Dr. Michael Shermer wrote about his own paranormal experience in Scientific America and then said, of course, it wasn't paranormal. But anyway, I think everybody has a story, George, a story of the strange, and that's what drives the campfire and drives all the interest in the paranormal, I think.
I think so, too. Let's talk about the Angel of a Nurse.
Yeah, this is a short one, but it's kind of short but kind of sweet. This came from Sarah from Pennsylvania. Her grandfather was in the hospital for a relatively minor surgery, rotator cuff surgery. He had the procedure, and they came out fine. Everything was well. Sarah's grandmother came to visit him, and he kept telling her about a beautiful nurse who came in to help him. And he went on and on and on about talking about how nice she was and how her hair was so beautiful. And Sarah says that was extremely out of character for him. It wasn't the way that her grandfather would normally talk about women. Now, she said, don't get her wrong, he loved women, but he wouldn't fawn over someone like that, especially when they were only in his room for a short time. The next day, Sarah's grandma went to pick up Grandpa and bring him home. And the staff told her that they had lost him. And the grandmother thought they meant they physically lost him. And she said, well, go find him. Go get him. And they said, no, I'm so sorry. He passed away. This was completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. Sarah and her grandmother think that the lady that Grandpa was going on and on and on about wasn't a nurse. It was an angel visiting.
To take him
away. Preparing him to pass over the other side. And I think that's those deathbed experiences are so common, whether it's, even in my own family, my wife talks about an uncle who was of Italian descent. Her family's Italian, and one of her uncles was calling out to his mother in Italian, like he was talking to her shortly before he passed. I think that's so common when you talk to, and later we'll have another healthcare worker story, but it's so common you talk to healthcare workers, and you're like, oh, yeah, this happens.
Well, there's no question about it. And people have seen these very unusual things happen in hospitals and visitations and things like that. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had one, and we may have talked on a show about it, but it was a great story. I had a doctor from the United Kingdom come on, and he talked about when he was in his residency, he worked in triage and helped people, you know, if they skin their knee and those kind of things. So anyway, he got a code blue to come up to the fourth or fifth floor. And because there was emergency. So he left what he was doing and ran up the stairs, and then got to about the third or fourth floor, and he saw this patient in a gown, an elderly gentleman, and he had a gown on, but he was naked from the waist down. And he thought maybe it was a dementia case, something like that.
So he running around up, nude.
Yeah. He opened up the doors of the ward and yelled out to the nurses, said, could somebody assist this gentleman? I think he's having some issues. But then he didn't stay with him. He ran up because, you know, there's a patient in distress. Guess who was lying in the bed when he got up there?
There you go.
That man.
Yeah.
And
how do you explain that? How do you explain it?
I don't know. And they worked on him, and the man died. And I almost wonder, did that doctor see his soul departing? Because he went back down and talked to the nurses. And they said, we don't know what you were talking about. We went out into the hall. There was no one there. So did he see that man's soul departing? I have to believe there's a good shot that he did.
How about the ghost nanny?
Oh, this is a fun one. So anyway, this is Matt from Michigan. He was a young father And this was, again, in a lot of stories from the 90s. I guess.
By the way, you know your material, Jim. I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Anyhow, his first baby was born, and and he was in a crib, and he would sit in the living room in the evening and read a book or watch television. And then on a couple of occasions, he would hear the baby cry in the next room, and his wife would be in the kitchen or down in the basement folding laundry, and he would go and tend to the baby. But sometimes, through his peripheral vision, he'd see his wife, or what he thought was his wife, walk through the kitchen and into the baby's room, and then the baby would stop crying. Now, Matt says, here's what's interesting. There were a couple of instances where this happened, where she came into the living room, his wife came into the living room for the kitchen. Matt was surprised. He said to her, weren't you just in the baby's room? And she would look at him, surprised, and said, no, I wasn't. But yet Matt would swear he had seen a figure cross the kitchen into the baby's room, and the baby would stop crying after several seconds. His wife looked at him as though, what are you thinking? Are you crazy or something? So that was strange enough on its own, but here's what really freaked him out. The nights when his wife was at work, his wife is a nurse, and she worked evenings, three nights a week. Matt would be home alone with the baby. Again, he'd be sitting in the living room, reading a book, watching TV, and he'd see a shadow or a figure cross the kitchen and go down the hall when the baby would cry. It made no sense, as he was the only person in the house other than the child. He said, now, it was quite shocking. He said he never saw it directly, just in his peripheral vision, but something in the shape of a woman would move across the kitchen towards the bedroom, and the baby would stop crying. Now, once he moved, he asked the people who purchased the house from them, and they were a young family as well, and they had small children. They said, do your babies cry very much in the house? And they said, no. You know, it's funny. They start to cry, but not for long at all. They just seem to quiet down by themselves. Matt from Michigan and the Ghost Nanny.
I love that. We're going to get into more stories next hour, and we'll take phone calls, and maybe our callers will share stories where you can write another book, Jim.
Well, cool. I love stories. I love to hear stories.
And you never run out of them, do you?
No, and I worried about that. And I think we're getting more stories now than we ever have, because, like I said, everybody has people. Have stories, and there's, billions of people on the earth. So I don't think we're going to run out, George.
No, I don't think so either. And what do you think fuels that, the fact that we get so many stories like that?
Well, I think two things. One, they're real, and they really happen. I don't think people are making all this stuff up. And I think people want to tell somebody, and they want to tell somebody in a no-judgment zone. I've had people come on the show and say, I've never even told my relatives about this, and this happened to me 30 years ago, but I really wanted to talk to somebody, and I felt that I could come on the program because you're not going to play Mike Wallace and say, well, you know, you know, you're going to be accepting and non-judgmental and have a safe place where people can share their stories without ridicule.
We're going to come back with Jim Harold. We're going to take more calls with you and your stories. His website is his name, jimharold.com.